Morning to each one. Greetings in Jesus' precious name this morning. It's good to be here again with you all. I haven't been to this building, but I remember being with you all in the previous location, worshiping with you all there. It was good. It's good to be back again. Certainly good to visit family and renew friendships, make new acquaintances, and find the people of God to worship with this morning. I think that is probably one of the biggest highlights of travel for me, is finding the people of God and connecting in worship. Just sitting here listening to the songs, to the thoughts that were shared, and being able to worship together. I also find it interesting what we, as people, can find to worship together in, as far as a building. It blesses me to see congregations take what is available and turn them into a worship place. I think God is blessed when we do that. I'm reminded of a church in Wisconsin. I didn't go there. I visited a number of times. They took an old tavern or old bar, turned it into a church house. And in Wisconsin, If you said you were going to the tavern or bar, it wasn't no Applebee's joint. It was a place strictly for serving alcohol, beverages, and everything that goes with that. So when we can take something of low nature like that, turn it into a house of God, it blesses my heart. This morning, I'd like to share on a very familiar Bible story. Preached this message a while back at our church, and I just enjoy every now and then taking a very old Bible story that we all know very well. You can turn to 1 Samuel 17. I don't have just a wonderful title for this. I simply call it David and Goliath, a story that we probably all just, as soon as we talk about David and Goliath, we get a lot of different pictures. Probably pictures from Bible stories that we've read, stories that we've listened to, and we have this image in our mind what it was like. Whether it's correct or not, our imaginations can play tricks on us. I don't have anything new or necessarily an outline or points to share. I simply want to look at this story and be reminded of the mercy, the love, and the sovereignty of God. There's just so much that plays into this story, and I do intend to, here in just a bit, read the entire chapter of 1 Samuel 17. But when I prepared for this, I did a little looking into the story surrounding this. And I know that timelines are not always completely accurate, and so I'm going to give you what I found, and it may not be quite perfectly lined up with your timeline as well. But if we would back up a couple of chapters and thinking about Saul, because he's a pretty major player in this story. If I understand it right, Saul was king for about 5 years. Let's just turn back a couple of chapters. I believe it's, yes, Samuel, 1 Samuel 15 is where we have the event where Saul deliberately disobeyed God. God told him to destroy the Amalekites. He did not do that, and he was king for about 5 years until that event happened. It was about another 4 years after his act of disobedience, this one that's recorded in 15, until chapter 16 happened, where David was anointed king. So Saul was a king about 9 years until David was anointed. And it just helps me to think about life for these people back here as this story was recorded, because I can read through the book of Samuel and I can almost squash some of this all into 1 year, and it didn't happen that way. Life was unfolding for them just as it was is for us today. But now chapter 16 and 17 all happened within about a year of each other. We have David being anointed king, and in chapter 16, by verse 13, that had all taken place. And sometime in that year, and I find this interesting because when people were anointed for something, the Spirit of God rested on them. And it was pretty evident that the Spirit of God no longer rested on Saul. He had disobeyed God. I don't know when he lost that connection with God, but by verse 14, the Spirit of God was no longer with Saul, and he needed somebody to quiet his depression, to bring him out of depression is what I believe he was facing. Because without God, that is where we go with our stresses into depression. David comes back from that, and we'll touch a little bit more on that. And then I do want to mention here at the end of chapter 17, when we go into 18, I'm not exactly sure when this switch happens. So just reading the first couple verses of 18 again this morning, I wondered if that didn't happen right away after 1 Samuel 17, but somewhere in there, when Saul became jealous of David, that happened about another 11 years after David killed Goliath, when that began to unfold and David began to run from Saul. So it wasn't all happening in 1 year. Life was unfolding. God was working in David's heart. God was still trying to work in Saul's heart. I really believe that God still wanted Saul's heart. He wanted Saul to repent and come back to him. And it's a lesson for us just in thinking of Saul down there. I won't touch on that much more. God still was trying to draw Saul back, and Saul chose to turn against God. I find these little dates and things to help me bring this story into a little bit more reality. It didn't all just happen in a couple of months. We're talking of quite a few year time span here as God was working with people. Let's read 1 Samuel 17. I know it's a long chapter, but I just enjoy thinking about what the Word of God has to share. Verse 1 of 1 Samuel 17. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and were gathered together at Shochoh, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shochoh and Azekah in Ephesadammim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there came out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Now he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his, and the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel, and said unto them, Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. And if he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Judah, Jesse, and he had 8 sons. And the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle. And the name of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab the firstborn, the next unto him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went in return from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistines drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. And Jesse said unto David, his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves and run to the camp to thy brethren and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their thousands and look how their brethren fare and take their pledge. And Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with the keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the hosts were going forth to fight and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. As he talked with them, behold, there came out of the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, have ye seen this man that is come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spoke to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after the manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard, and when he spake unto the men. Let me reread that. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner. And the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for them. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep. There came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put a helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go. For he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off. And he took his staff in his hand, chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had even a script. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David. And the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air, and the beast of the field." Then said David to the Philistine, "Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beast of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." And it came to pass, the Philistine arose, and came and drew nigh to meet David. And David hasted and ran towards the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag, took thence a stone, and slang it, and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of the sheath thereof, and slew him, and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until they come to the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistine fell down by the way to Sherem, even unto Gath and unto Ekron. And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. And when Saul saw David, he go forth against the Philistines, he said unto Abner, the captain of the host, "Abner, whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As thy soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell." And the king answered, "Inquire thou whose son this stripling is." And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son art thou, this young man? Whose son art thou, thou young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." It's a lot of reading, a lot of things taking place. And I imagine this story has fascinated us from childhood, especially us men and boys. Thinking about this battle, it's something that for some reason just stirs within the heart of man. I don't know if it's the hero of the story or what all it does, but it stirs within us something that we just like this story. We see a young man that had experience in only warring with animals come take on a giant of a man that experienced warfare from his youth. Very two different people, and yet, and you look at the story and you look at the odds and the impossibility of David even being able to come close to conquering Goliath. Nobody thought that this was going to go very well at all. And I'll bet you that Goliath had a reputation that preceded him. I don't believe this is the first time the Israelites face this man. He had not only a reputation, but probably there was men in this army that experienced battle with him, or friends that they had lost. Men that they knew that were killed by this man. People knew who Goliath was. This was not the first time they had met him, I really doubt. And perhaps as the stories preceded him, like stories do today, they grew and grew and grew. And I don't know what all kinds of tales went ahead of this man. Let's stop and think about some of the natural aspects of Goliath. I'm guessing this ceiling is 10-foot ceilings in here. Is that about what we're looking at, or is it 12? I was thinking it's 10. If you take the modern measurement, 6 cubits and a span, that would be 9 foot 9 inches. Now, the cubit and the span varied of king lengths, and I actually wonder if Goliath wasn't taller than that. Because if they were using Saul's cubit, which is from the tip of this finger to your elbow, So a short guy like me, probably it wouldn't even be 18 inches. But you take Saul, that was head and shoulders above everyone, could very well be that his cubit was bigger than that. Goliath could have been 10, 12 feet tall. Now, David was but a youth. I don't know his age. I've never been able to really nail down a specific year. I'm guessing somewhere between 15 and 20. You take some of the young men here. I know most of our youth are gone this morning at another place. Your youth. You take, let's say, an average 5 foot, 6 inch tall youth, and you place him against a 12-foot man. Just try and picture that. A man that whose head would be brushing the ceiling in here. And you take one of your average-sized youth boys and you tell him, you go wrestle that man down. Like, we're going to just talk about Mennonite wrestling, not take his life. Just, you go wrestle that man down. What are the odds? Let's think about his coat of mail. From my understanding, just his coat weighed 100 pounds. Now, I remember as a young boy, we used to have chickens and our feed mill would deliver chicken feed in 100-pound sacks. And boy, I thought it was big stuff when I could pick up this 100-pound sack and carry it 5 feet. Man, I was really getting strong. Goliath wore this for battle, and he wasn't just carrying it 5 feet. He wore it like you and I wear a jacket today. Now start picturing that. I don't believe Goliath was 12 foot tall on a beanpole. I think he was broad. I think his arms were huge. He could carry a 100-pound jacket like you wear your jacket today. That didn't include his helmet. What else did he wear? He had a target of greaves. He had a number of other items of clothes. Would it be impossible to say that his armor weighed 150 pounds? I doubt it. And he would go do battle. I don't know how long they fought during a day, but let's say a 10-hour workday. He would go fight for 10 hours carrying 150 pounds of armor with him. Take tremendous amount of energy, I would think, to be able to do that. Now, the spear talks about his spear and his sword. I believe that's two different items. So his spear, it would have been something, from what I understand in their warfare, the spear was something they would throw. They would throw the spear, go retrieve it. When it was hand-to-hand combat, they would use the sword. The head of the spear weighed 12 pounds. Probably most of your sledgehammers are 8-pounders. You might have a 10-pounder in there. This guy had a 12-pound head on his spear. And we have some 2.5-inch pipe out there. So his weaver's beam would have been about the size, his handle on that, said it was a weaver's beam, would have been about the size of this cup. My hand barely goes around that, which I have small hands. But I imagine he could easily grab a hold of this 2 to 2.5-inch round pipe or whatever, probably was wooden, that the head of the spear was fastened to. What the entire thing weighed, and it would have been about probably 5 to 8 feet long. What that thing weighed, I am not sure. 15, 18 pounds. And can you imagine going out to do battle with a man that wore 100+ pounds of armor that had this size of a weapon in his hand that he would throw? I don't know how far he could throw it. It was probably a lot further than 10 feet. And you were going to go out and face this man. I want to touch on verse 15 a little bit. We're just going to stop thinking about Goliath for a little bit, switch a little bit of gears. Verse 15 can be confusing, but I think what was happening is, as the writer was writing down about how the battle was unfolding, and then he took a few steps back and went to talk about David. You know, as you write about a story, you can't do it in real time. You're writing about Goliath coming out and challenging, and then Where does David come in? This is talking about David coming in. I think it actually refers back to, if you read this, but David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep. I think he had been playing the harp for Saul. And I wonder if at the time of this battle, Saul or the Philistines were coming out to fight. And Saul said, okay, my mind is busy now. I've got things to think about. You go home, take care of your father's sheep. I need to go out to battle. And it says here in verse 16 that for 40 days this man came out, this Goliath came out and challenged the armies of God. David was at home taking care of his father's sheep, and the night before they got all this stuff together. And what I want to mention here is they didn't have WhatsApp, they didn't have email. David didn't know what was taking place. His brothers had gone off to war. They probably hadn't heard a word about what had happened. And Saul was the first man, first king, to actually start having an army, like a paid army, where men made a business, a career out of being part of the king's army. And this is how they supplied food for the army. People like Jesse would send food to feed their children and a few others to sustain the army. And this is what's happening here, 15 and on, as David and his father are preparing to send food out. And you know, I want you to think about this man again. We'll go back to Goliath for a little bit. How demoralizing would it be for 40 days to listen to this giant of a man come out and say what he did? How would that make you feel? We talk about facing hard times and discouraging times and difficult things in life. Think about twice a day for 40 days, 80 times you hear this giant come out. And he probably didn't just mumble it. And he did everything he could to intimidate the people of God. David recognized something the rest of the army did not recognize, I don't think. Somehow David had a picture, a much bigger picture than what the people of Israel did. Take a look in verse 26. At the very end, David says that he, talking of Goliath, should defy the armies of the living God. David suddenly got a picture that this was much bigger than simply a battle. This was Satan, through Goliath, coming and trying to destroy the people of God, to wipe them off the face of this earth, and to get rid of them. David understood that this Goliath's challenge was not simply to the nation of Israel, but it was an act of defiance against the holy God of Israel. Think about Saul living in disobedience to God. He had never repented of that. Think about what that did to all the people following him. And this is a challenge for those of us as leaders, fathers, church leaders, wherever you find yourself in responsibility because of Saul's disobedience to God. His army was rendered powerless to stand against the foe. And I'm not talking about just a nation. I'm talking about the foe as in Satan's kingdom, the other kingdom. This is the big picture that we're looking at. There was another man in here. And verse 13, it talks about Eliab, the firstborn. Remember that this was all happening within a year, just probably 8 months to a year prior. Eliab was there at that anointing of David being king. Think about it. Think about what Eliab was going through. He was the eldest. He was the one to receive the inheritance, the double portion of inheritance. He should have been the one anointed leader. And Samuel had come in there. This had to be fresh in Eliab's mind. As Samuel had come in there, and he said, no, that's not the one. Eliab would have been the first one. No, that's not the one I have chosen. And Eliab went to that meeting with Samuel fully expecting to be the one anointed, and he wasn't. And they went down through that entire family, and finally the baby runt was anointed. It didn't make any sense to Eliab. Why? Why was David anointed and not me? And we see a man that did not align himself with the kingdom of God. He aligned, he became jealous, and that consumed him. And I think this is what we're seeing here in verses 28 and 29, where Eliab just lashed out at David in anger. Instead of aligning himself with God's plan, he chose to focus on himself and to become bitter because life wasn't working out. And he took his anger out on David. Moving on in the story, we see that David relied on past experiences with God for facing something that he didn't know. And I want to keep this fresh in our mind that David woke up this in the morning, loaded all those donkeys with all that food, and he left having no idea what he was going to face at the end of the day. Maybe it took several days to get there, I don't know. But whatever the case, the morning that he got up, before Goliath came out and challenged him, he had no idea. It was just like you getting out of bed this morning, and you have no idea what's going to happen after 12 o'clock. On your way home from church, you could have a life-changing experience. David didn't know it. Goliath was coming. Sometimes we get this thought in the mind as we read these entire Bible stories that David somehow had this sense of knowing that Goliath was there. No, he didn't. His giant came out when he least expected it. And that's how our giants face us today. They come out when we are not ready for them. But David relied on his past experiences. God had protected him from the lion and the bear. And it wasn't no taking his high-powered rifle out there and taking care of them. Look at what verse 36 says. No, verse 35, right at the end, he says, "I caught him by the beard and slew him." How many of you would get that close to an angry bear? That we know how dogs act when you take their food away from them when they're eating. And that's what David did. He went and took the lamb out of the mouth of the lion and of the bear. How many of you would walk up to that mouth of that lion and the bear, take their food, and then grab him by the beard and stick a knife into him? Would you have that kind of courage? Just think about it. He relied on God for from his past experiences. We can do the same today. We have past experiences of difficult times, but do we rely on them as we face the new giants? David did not use others' protection. I see this when he tried on Saul's armor. I was looking as I was reading, and I'm not good at doing two things at once, but there where it says he essayed to go, for he had not proved him. I believe he put this armor on and walked out there. Maybe there was another man there that he's like, "Hey, let me test this armor. How does it work?" And a little bit of testing, he's like, "No, this isn't going to work. I can't use others' protection. I need to use what I know will work for me." And we have to be careful with that. We do need the help of each other. But David had not proved and tested. He was not proficient with the sword. We see that later on in his life, David became very proficient with the sword. But today, he had not proved them. He was going to rely on what God had given him. David placed his confidence in God, knowing that aligning himself with God would always bring the victory. Aligning ourselves with God will always bring the victory. And we talked about this in Sunday school just briefly. As we think about Paul experiencing that beating so that another man could find Christ. And sometimes life isn't very easy, but God will use our difficulties for other people's salvation. David used what God gave him to fight the giant. But I also find it is very interesting that David used the enemy's weapon to finally finish him off. It says David didn't have a sword, so he pulled out Goliath's sword and used Goliath's own weapon to destroy his enemy. And we see very quickly because of faith and belief in an unseen God, and one young man took the paralyzing fear from one army and threw it over on the next. As soon as the Philistines saw that giant fall, they weren't paralyzed. They were kicked into high gear with fear. And they took off out of there as fast as they could, but some of them were not quite fast enough. And God gave them a great victory. But I want us to remember that sin in our own hearts has a very paralyzing effect on each other. What about the men that were there? I want to wrap this up. What about the men that were there that day? Do you think they forgot about that day? What about all those men? And I didn't really take time to study how many thousand men were there. Think about all those men that were there for 40 days. Do you think they forgot about this experience very quick? We read this Bible story, but this was a life-changing event for so many of those people, thousands of people. I don't think they forgot this day. Whatever happened to Eliab? I don't know if the Bible ever refers to him again from here on out. Whatever happened to him? As you think about the events of this day and God working, I don't have the answers for this. But we know, we can read in the Bible, we know what happened with God's kingdom. God's will continued to happen. Even though there was men like Saul, men like Eliab, that seemingly pushed against God's kingdom, did not follow through with God's kingdom, God's will continued to happen. And even today, men continue to rise and fall around truth. We can do the best we can to live in faith, live out a Christian life, but there will still always be men that will rise up beside us, like thousands of those Israelite men did with David. But there also will be men like Saul that will fall. They won't continue on with the truth. But what will we do? Where will each one of us be in the records of history? We all face giants today. We all face Goliath, difficult things, things that are much bigger, much stronger, much deadlier than we are. But where will we be in the records of history? Let's kneel for prayer.